May the words of my mouth and the meditations of our hearts be always acceptable in thy sight, O Lord, our strength and our Redeemer. Amen. Amen. Do you have a burning desire to do what is right in the eyes of God? During Halloween weekend, Alan and I went to a party where many were dressed in costume. We were not, although I was dressed in my priest collar, as I had been to the hospitals earlier that day. I was asked by the host to say grace, and I thought I would have some fun. So I said to the gathering, since I am dressed up like a priest, I have been asked to say the grace. And so I said the grace, and we started to eat. It was sort of a stand-up, and a little bit later on, about 30 minutes or so, a young mom who did not know me with her baby came up to me and said, that grace was way too good. You're really a priest, aren't you? At which point I started to try and work on her to get her to be a member of St. John's. She told me quickly she was a devout Catholic. I said, that's okay, we can do that. That experience paradoxically points to the fundamental truth, though, that our outer appearance, our outer nature, is not what makes us who we are, especially in the eyes of God. What matters to God is your striving for authentic, Christ-like living. And yes, God does call you to be Christ-like, a very high calling indeed, yet one that is worthy for our striving. But what does that mean? We hear that. What does that mean? Can that be a burning desire of your life? To be more like Jesus Christ? Let's go back to a very important teaching. Jesus walks up the side of that mountain 2 miles west of Capernaum, overlooking the Sea of Galilee, and he arrives to tell the world that God had a new plan for his people. On that grassy hillside, Christ introduced a life different than any other that had been imagined up to that point in history, if only one would choose to live it. This was the moment that Jesus proclaimed that God desired all of God's people to live in a radically new way. A way that, if lived to its fullest, was one that would later be called a person who was a saint. His Sermon on the Mount turned the world on its head. As Jesus taught that the standards of the world were not God's standards. Appearance, money, relationships, laws, judgment, war, and peace, it had all changed, Jesus proclaimed. A new age was being inaugurated, and humanity and the church has struggled ever since that proclamation to find its way to God through it. In his classic work, The Sermon on the Mount, The Key to Success in Life, Emmett Fox writes the following. The Bible is really a textbook of metaphysics, a manual for the growth of the soul. He writes, it looks at all questions from this point of view. It is impossible to emphasize this point too much. For this reason, it takes the broadest view of every subject. It sees all things in their relationship to the human soul, and it uses many common terms in a far wider sense than that given to them by common use. So Jesus proclaims, blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. How then are we to understand that being poor in spirit opens up the kingdom of heaven to us? Most of us here today would not say that being poor in spirit is a good thing. And yet, that is exactly what Jesus is saying. Might Christ be saying that the only way we can approach his life is when we admit the poverty of our spirit apart from God? The poverty of our spirit apart from God, that without God, we are in fact powerless. And it is that first beatitude that Christ proclaims early on in his ministry, that to find God, you must first empty yourself. Can you empty yourself? One of the great beauties of a little child, of an infant that comes into the world, and even a toddler, is that when they come into the world, they are most like God. We mess them up. We got messed up. They are most like God because they are empty receptors of the life that they have been created, born into. Macrina Vidaker, a poet, writes the following in one of my favorite poems called The Prayer of the Empty Water Jar. It goes like this. Jesus, I come into the warmth of your presence, knowing that you are the very emptiness of God. I come before you holding the water jar of my life. I came to be filled, but I am already full. I am too full. I am full of things that crowd out your healing presence. I am so full there is no room for you. You ask me to reach into my water jar. One by one, Jesus, you enable me to lift out the things that are a hindrance to my wholeness. Finally, I sit with my empty water jar. I hear you whisper, you have become a space for God. Now there is hope. When we become a space for God, we are on the path to becoming Christ-like. Today's gospel from the 12th chapter of Mark is all about what it is to be Christ-like, to become that space for God. The words of Jesus can pierce our ears as it did the scribes, but can also massage our heart into a new understanding. Jesus said, "Beware of the scribes who walk around in long robes, to be greeted in the marketplaces, have the best seats in the synagogues, and places of honor at banquets. They devour widows' houses and for the sake of appearances say long prayers." Then he goes on to say, "Truly I tell you, this poor widow has put more in than all those others." Jesus uses that famous story of the widow's mite, the story we all know so well that he witnesses in the temple. He uses it and juxtaposes it against the scribes' false holiness, not only to get our attention, but as well to point to what it looks like when one has a heart for God. When one has a heart for God. When you have a heart for God, you acknowledge your poverty apart from God. And you invite Jesus to come within. St. Thomas Aquinas once said that holiness is nothing else but a resolution made the heroic act of a soul that surrenders to God. Let us, at St. John's, surrender our souls to God, acknowledging that we are poor in spirit, but knowing that with God all things are possible. As the widow gave all that she had, give Jesus your life. Amen.